The Lightning Network came along to provide instant settlement. So in Lightning, transactions can resolve within half of a second. Then you can also have much cheaper fees of being able to send a payment with zero fees or a small fraction of a fee. It was created to facilitate, you know, much faster, much cheaper transactions on top of Bitcoin while maintaining the assurity, the security that Bitcoin provides.
Is Bitcoin's payments technology truly taking off? How can businesses around the globe leverage this new monetary protocol and the Lightning Network? We get into some of these topics and more in today's episode with Voltage CEO Graham Krizek. As a reminder, this podcast is for educational purposes only. If you like the content, please remember to follow, subscribe, or share, as this all helps us greatly. Lynn and Israel are partners at Base Layer Advisors, where they employ their strong network of venture capital partners and startups to connect investors with unique opportunities within the Bitcoin innovation space. Alongside this, they support founders with their strategic growth and fundraising goals. Visit our website's advisory section to learn more. Welcome to Build with Bitcoin. I'm co-host Israel Munoz, and joined with co-host Lynn Bairstow, today we welcome Graham Krizek, CEO and founder of Voltage. Welcome, Graham.
Hey, thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Yeah, we're excited to get into today's conversation. Of course, we want to get into what you're working on at Voltage, which is a infrastructure payments provider for the Lightning Network, specifically layer two on the Bitcoin protocol stack. So before we get into the payments side and what you've built at Voltage, Graham, we'd love to start first with a little bit more about you, understanding you as a founder and CEO, and perhaps, you know, the backstory of what led you to decide to build Voltage. So maybe we can start there.
Yeah, definitely. So I guess my background is in software engineering. So I started my career, so to speak, as a software engineer. I actually graduated with a business degree out of college, but I knew that I wanted to go right into software engineering. And it was kind of like one of those things where you could switch your major, spend like thousands more dollars in like a couple more years of school, or you could just try and just jump into it. And I decided to just do the jump into it route. So graduated with a business degree and went right into software engineering. And I've been doing that basically ever since, up into Voltage. And I got started in Bitcoin about 2012. And so, you know, fairly early into Bitcoin. And then it was basically has been a hobby of mine ever since. I've been fascinated from it. Just what intrigued me from the most was obviously the technical side. I never really took into a lot of consideration of the economic side of the fixed supply and like the all the fiscal policy that goes around it and all those things. It was just really cool tech of this decentralized payment system that is like censorship resistant. You can send anywhere and like all those things. I was just really fascinated by that. And so I kept it as kind of a hobby of just contributing to Bitcoin Core, writing open source projects, doing all that I could to just kind of participate in the ecosystem. And then worked for a lot of like small startups along the way. Right before starting Voltage, I was working at Salesforce, so kind of got a large like enterprise company experience as well. And then one day I was kind of like, I wanted to get more and more into Bitcoin as like in my job of like, I really want to, you know, I'm tired of mixing, you know, doing my hobby on the weekends and then like doing, you know, my day job during the day. I really wanted to combine those two. And so then alongside that, as I was building projects, like what I saw was, you know, myself as well as many other people, where every time you wanted to start a project or something, you had to like really kind of, you had to start from ground zero. You had to like build Bitcoin Core from source, especially when you started looking at Lightning, setting up a Lightning node with the channels and the deployment, all of those things. It was just like really complex to even get started on just developing a project. And so I wrote basically the origin of Voltage, of a platform that could really, you know, click a button, easily get a node, easily get channels, just get everything set up for you so we can really start developing projects much quicker and easier. Showed it to a few friends and whatnot. People really started to like it and start to use it. And so it was one of those things that it kind of took off unexpectedly. And it was one of those things where it was like, I either need to shut this down because I don't have time to maintain it, or I need to like turn it into a company and like go and, you know, do it. And I, you know, decided to go and do it and been basically building it ever since. So that was kind of the original background into me, and then as well as, you know, starting Voltage.
Graham, when you looked at having this suite of tools that made it easier to implement, what was your vision about who the customer would be, and has that turned out to be who the customer is? Is it people who have already been familiar with Bitcoin and were wanting to, you know, increase the usability of it, or did you envision traditional fintechs or other types of e-commerce companies that could just incorporate it into the back end?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question, because it is definitely, like, as I started, it was absolutely very focused to, like, retail kind of consumers, anyone that was very knowledgeable about Bitcoin already and wanted to, like, kind of take it a step further, either by just running a node for fun or developing a project or something like that. But that's definitely shifted to where, you know, we're very business focused platform today. We mainly serve businesses. That's where a lot of, you know, our efforts go. We do still have some, like, of the retail side that we service, but vast majority of the business is focused on the B2B side. So that was one of the big shifts of really starting in this retail focused Bitcoin centric group, which we quickly found out that one, there was people that tried the platform that were like, man, this is still way too technical for me. You know, we're trying to simplify it. We did simplify a lot, but there was, like, still, there's still too much to overcome to really understand it. And then there's also the amount of, like, people that were interested in operating a node and doing all those things was also pretty small. And so from the business side, it was very hard to scale the business, because the TAM was just very, very small. And it was still a very technical group. So it was kind of like, you know, just this fraction of the world that could have ever used it. And so we kind of realized that we need to expand out, and we need to, one, there's a lot of, like, the Lightning Network has a lot of value to businesses that are transacting, be it globally or have already crypto operations, whatever it is. So there's a lot of value to add there. There's far more of them. And then as we've iterated on the product, we've also been able to make it a lot easier. So we've absolutely shifted from that, you know, early retail into, you know, a global kind of business platform that does serve fintechs and crypto exchanges, a bunch of different people that we'll kind of get into. But the evolution was definitely there from the start to today.
And maybe we should just take a step back for somebody who's less familiar with Lightning on Bitcoin. What are the advantages it provides from a payments platform? And what are some of the key benefits that they can gain from the system?
Yeah, absolutely. So with Bitcoin, you have, like, there's naturally some limitations with Bitcoin, because it's for it to maintain its assurity of being this really decentralized, very robust, very secure platform. There's some trade-offs that have to happen in that. And that's generally, like, your transactions are somewhat slower of, like, you have to have, like, at least, you know, there's blocks every about 10 minutes to have assurity. You know, it's maybe 30 minutes to an hour for a payment to get confirmed on chain and have a good assurance that it's not going to get double spent or something like that. And then additionally, every transaction you have to pay a miner fee. So the it really disincentivizes some lower end of the payments, of some smaller payments, because you might be paying $5 in a miner fee to send $5 in Bitcoin. And so that doesn't make a lot of sense. So the Lightning Network came along to do to provide instant settlement. So in Lightning, transactions can resolve within half of a second. And then you can also have much cheaper fees of being able to send a payment with zero fees or a small fraction of a fee instead of having to pay these large miner fees up front. So it was created to facilitate, you know, much, much faster, much cheaper transactions on top of Bitcoin while maintaining the assurity, the security that Bitcoin provides. So that was the original requirement for it. Lightning is a peer-to-peer network, not a blockchain. So there's a little bit of a differences there in how it operates. But ultimately, to be able to facilitate payments in the Lightning Network, you have to have a node, something that is, you know, has payment channels into other nodes in the network and being able to process payments through that. And so there's quite a bit of differences between Bitcoin Layer 1 and Bitcoin on Lightning, but it was created to solve some of those problems.
Yeah, and from the payments lens, it's, I think many people who haven't looked into this industry are still not aware of just how massive of an opportunity and efficiency this provides, right? I mean, you're talking about real-time 24/7 payments, and of course, in a borderless fashion. We were speaking to it a little bit before we started recording here, Graham, that I tried this remittance business model from 2014 to 2016, and at the time, I mean, that was one of our biggest, you know, kind of question marks or risks as we were trying to solve for this 10-minute block time. You know, you didn't have this infrastructure, this payments infrastructure that Lightning, of course, provides for real-time payments. So, you know, the Lightning Network itself, maybe can you help us step back a little bit? Because as I understand, Voltage was born as a Lightning company, right? I mean, Lightning is in kind of your DNA, let's say, What it was around 2017, 18, I believe, that the architecture of Lightning started to be more, you know, developed and known. Mm-hmm. Your interest in Bitcoin, Graham, here's my question. Was it straight into this real-time payment side, the Lightning stack, or what was it that drew you in?
So I first started just in Bitcoin. And I remember when Lightning first kind of got announced and it was, you know, first talked about. I mean, I found it very interesting because, like, I guess I originally got interested in Bitcoin because of, like, this technology, this global network that you can send anywhere in the world. Without having any third parties, no one in the middle of it, and you can go, you know, from here to France like instantly. I mean, you can broadcast instantly. There's confirmation times and all that stuff, but you can really it opened up a whole new world, a whole new possibilities of what you can do with money, with value from the tech side. And again, like, I was very ignorant as far as the how much, like, the price aspect of it, of, oh, how much, like, the fixed supply, what the price could go to. I mean, it was sub $5 when I started using Bitcoin. I never even thought about it reaching $100,000. Like, that was just never even a thought to me. I was actually the opposite of, like, when it started to get above, like, $20, I was like, man, this hobby's getting expensive because, like, Bitcoin's going up, but I want to, like, keep buying cheap Bitcoin because I'm just playing around with it and testing things. And so I had no concept of the economic side of it. So I was very interested in the tech from, like, the payments protocol, what it can do. When I found out about Lightning, that was the thing that I think really was like, that's why I started a business in it, is because I saw it as like, this is going to unlock the next level for Bitcoin, allow it to move into the next phase of its kind of adoption cycle of really, people loved it for this global payment system, but it was actually like, on-chain is like not that great at payments from like anything that you're not moving, like, you know, less than $1 million or something and doing these kinds of infrequent payments. There's some things that could be better on it, which is why Lightning kind of got created in the first place. So it was like, it's going to fulfill, like, it has all the sound economics, like all those things, a secure network, but this is going to launch into the next phase. And so that's what really got me interested. And that's why I started the company, is because I saw this is what's going to take Bitcoin to the next level. And I want to be a part of that. I want to do what I can do to make that happen.
Graham, you know, you since you were in it since 2012, that's really early. And especially with a focus of looking at it as a technology, many people, including those of us who consider ourselves true Bitcoiners, did get, you know, intrigued by some of the subsequent technologies that came out, like Ethereum or other blockchains, just as they were trying to solve some of the maybe latency or lag issues, that processing timeline issues that Bitcoin had as a way of securing the protocol. Did you look or explore any of these other technologies, and what was that? And if not, why? And if so, did Lightning provide like an alternative to some of these? Because I think that was a natural journey for many people as they saw the potential of the Bitcoin technology, but there also the limitations of it at that time.
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely explored a lot of the other protocols, all of those things. I feel like it's the journey of most Bitcoiners, is you start with Bitcoin, you get interested, and then you see this world of everything else. You get interested, you dig in, and then you realize one day that, oh, wow, none of this actually matters. None of this is actually value additive. And then you always come back to Bitcoin. Maybe that's not the case for everybody, but like, I think I've seen that play over and over and over again for a lot of people. And so for me, like, yes, I was definitely, you know, definitely started when I got involved. Like, it was basically Bitcoin was the only thing. I remember when like Litecoin came out and Dogecoin, some of those early ones, which was like, yeah, that's kind of interesting, but it's like not, you know, it's not the same. And then, you know, the 2016, 2017 like hype of ICOs, and when basically there's a big explosion of all these different things, I definitely, like, you know, got interested, played around with different things. And I was, again, for pretty much from the software perspective of really trying to write applications for these different chains and protocols, I would actually participate in hackathons for a lot of these other protocols and win prizes, but the prizes were always paid out in Bitcoin. They were never paid out in like the currency of these, like these other protocols. They always paid out in Bitcoin. So I was like, cool, I'm going to like experiment. I'm going to figure out what's possible in these other things and then get paid out in Bitcoin. And like, this sounds like this actually works out really well. So I have explored a lot of the other chains. And I think that that's also, it's really helpful from like understanding of the Bitcoin ecosystem and why, kind of having a more structured view on why is Bitcoin the way that it is and why is it good that it is the way that it is and those kinds of things, because it's easy to just kind of just go along with the crowd and just like think that, okay, it is good because people say it's good. It's extra helpful to be able to really look at everything else and like understand why are there bad design choices out there? Why are certain protocols not as good as Bitcoin? And then bring it back to Lightning. I mean, that's where we just did a report, I think last week with Fidelity, that really tried to highlight a lot of like the ability of like what is actually happening in Lightning under the hood. How fast is it? How cheap is it? All those things. And we were able to uncover a lot of good data that shows like it is the fastest way of moving any kind of crypto in general. And it's the cheapest out of any of them too. And so being able to couple those and then do that on Bitcoin was like a very, that was really, I really enjoyed that, really being able to enjoy like highlighting that as well as see it into fruition, because that's why a lot of these other things got created. It was because of a lack of X, Y, or Z on Bitcoin. And the more that we can kind of fix that or add that capability into Bitcoin, the better. And so that's what excites me as well.
And maybe to put a little, light on some of the things you're mentioning, Graham, for someone who's listening and interested into this payments aspect of the Bitcoin protocol, and maybe, you know, you cover some of this in the report you're mentioning with that you did along with Fidelity Digital Assets, but just comparing it to maybe some other familiar reference points as far as payment network capacity, what's today, how does Lightning compare to, you know, the Visas of the world or something that other people are maybe a little more familiar with, just to set a good, you know, kind of anchor or reference point?
Yeah, definitely. So to give the punchline at the beginning, so in the report that we did with Fidelity, we are able to showcase like customers that use us for Lightning, they can settle payments in less than half of a second. And they can do it for zero fees or sub a half a percent fee. And so that's very, very good. When you think about comparing it to like first comparing it to Visa charges at least, you know, 3% plus inside of their payment system. So drastically different as far as fees go. And then settlement times, you know, a lot of people think that when you swipe your card at a coffee shop or whatever, that the payment's instant because like, oh, the card worked, the payment went through, when like in the reality, there's days behind the scenes of banks settling up between themselves. The person that did the payment can always call their bank and like have it clawed back, all of those things. So it's like it feels instant, but it's truly not behind the scenes. And so when you think about comparing half a second to 5 days and then, you know, 0 to 0.5% versus 3%, those are completely different ballgames. Like that's like not even in the same, you know, same ballpark as far as what we're comparing here. And then when you think about comparing it to other crypto assets or something, there's, you know, blockchains that are made for specific reasons. So things like Solana that was made for like, you know, super fast transactions and things like that. The blockchain itself is very quick to confirm blocks, which is also a bad thing about it, which maybe it's a little bit too technical, but the actual confirmation to have like a surety of the confirmation is still several minutes. So again, you're comparing half a second to several minutes. And then additionally, when you think about, you know, super cheap networks, things like Tron, I think was created to be a super cheap network. And it's turning out to like, it's starting to increase in its fee structure because the network can't sustain itself on the low fees that were existing and then congestion and all of those things. And so given that, you know, the final point I'll make here is that Lightning given that it's a peer-to-peer network, we don't have a lot of those same limitations that exist inside of a blockchain. And so we're able to do basically infinite amounts of scalability in terms of how many like transactions per second we can do, because payments don't need to be globally distributed and verified across the entire world. Or in a central like database, like a Visa or something, it's just settled between the sender and the recipient. And so we can scale that into, you know, basically limitless. And really we're limited just by the amount of like transactions per second a server could process, which is very, very high. And so it changes the dynamic between the speed, the scalability, and the fees, comparing Lightning to these other protocols or companies or any of those things. And that they're really just not even the same. You can't even compare apples to apples there, because we're just in different ballgames entirely.
Graham, speaking of different ballgames, one of my favorite topics about potential of Bitcoin and payments is the micropayment aspect of it. And in the report, the Nostra network is processing a lot of these micropayments. And I'd love to hear your thoughts and your perspective on, because Visa, you really can't process a micropayment. The fee alone mm-hmm. just precludes that from ever being feasible. But with Bitcoin on the Lightning Network, that becomes totally possible. And in my mind, can remake so many different types of subscription models for payments. And consumption models of payments. What are your viewpoints, or what did you find in that report, and just your general business growth of Voltage?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that like micropayments are just fantastic, and I think that it's really only possible on Lightning for these micropayments. Even comparing to Visa, like you mentioned, is like really infeasible, but also on other blockchains, like it's pretty infeasible as well. And so Lightning's really the only protocol network that can make these like micropayments feasible. We kind of went into some depth into the report. It's completely possible. People do it a lot today. One of the big considerations we've been starting to kind of surface more and more of is when you're doing the micropayments use case, you need to be more aware of kind of your channel structures and setting up your node, or whether it's you doing it directly or your payment processor, whoever it is, and setting those up correctly, because you can very quickly get into that same kind of fee structure we're talking about on Bitcoin on-chain, where you're paying, you know, 5 sats for a 1 sat payment, just because of the ways that, you know, hops work in the network and things like that. So you just need to be careful in setting up your infrastructure or using a provider that knows what they're doing to set those things up correctly. But ultimately, from the protocol, it is completely possible to do these micropayments, which does unlock a huge amount of value, a huge amount of new use cases, and being able to actually send very small amounts of transactions, or small value transactions, very frequently across the network. And one of the big things I like to call it in that is like, you know, AI and like AI agents, and being able to like do autonomous payments across different, you know, different agents. I don't think that there is a platform that makes more sense than Lightning for that use case. There's you know, every crypto blockchain company out there is like touting how they're going to solve like AI agents and them communicating with each other and all those things. But really, like, you're still limited to all the speed of the transactions. You know, AI agents, they can think and operate way faster than we can. And if they're going to be limited by like confirmation times and like on Base or Ethereum or something like that, like it's not going to work. That doesn't make any sense. And so that's where Lightning comes in, is Lightning can move as fast as the AI agents themselves. And so that's going to be a really big deal. And I think that really goes into that whole micropayments play for Lightning.
Just due to Bitcoin being just naturally the native currency of the internet, that AI integration is just, I think, set to explode on the Lightning network. I want to kind of round out some of the few points that we just covered, because I think if you're just kind of superficially listening to this, you might think, oh yeah, you know, it sounds like some improvements and interesting payments technology, but really what we're talking about here is actually like, it's kind of a big leap, like a massive leap forward, you know, to your point of not even comparing, you know, apples to apples when we even talk about these other you know, large players in the payment space such as Visa. And I just kind of want to go back to a couple of the points that you mentioned, Graham, because I think they're so important. When you were talking about how what actually goes on in the background is when someone swipes their Visa card at a merchant, it feels real, like you were saying, you know, yep, just paid, you know, this network works great, which it does, and it served us well for, you know, many years. But I think, to your point, I mean, I just want to make sure people understand what you were mentioning there as far as what goes on in the background. What's actually real time, I mean, the real time aspect is basically IOUs, right? I mean, trusted IOUs, but it's not final settlement real time, right? Whereas in the Lightning network, we're talking about final settlement when you talk about seconds or microseconds. You kind of then also went a little bit into, you know, Bitcoin versus other quote unquote blockchains or cryptocurrencies. And even if you want to, you know, take some sort of, I think, technical comparison to, you know, why this blockchain as opposed to Bitcoin, you just mentioned that it's just a weaker foundation and technically just too complex is what I would summarize it as. And B, it's an inferior money you're talking about, right, when you're using some other token. So I just wanted to round out some of those points, because you went through them pretty quickly, and they're just massively important, I think, you know, the kind of building blocks of what this protocol means going forward.
Yeah. Build with Bitcoin is a proud affiliate partner of River. River is a financial services company that allows you to purchase, sell, and transfer your Bitcoin all through a great suite of products, high security standards, and as of recent, even allowing you to earn a Bitcoin yield on your U.S. dollar cash deposits. For a personalized onboarding experience, go to partner.river.com/buildwithbitcoin.
I think it's very important to kind of emphasize that, because we talk about this often, but I think for somebody listening in, that they just the reduction in time for settlement, the reduction in fees, and the ability to process on a different level than we've ever seen before just make it really worth paying attention to this technology. But Graham, maybe now it would be a good time for you to just drill down a little bit more specifically about the services and products that Voltage offers. So what are these, and who is the market? Who would be a client for the Voltage services?
Yeah, absolutely. So like you kind of alluded to, I guess, at the beginning, so we're a Lightning payments platform is how we like to kind of phrase ourselves. So we help businesses. We are primarily B2B, whether that's small business or up into enterprise level businesses. We help businesses integrate Lightning into their products and services. And so what does that mean is we have a suite of tools that can basically do the infrastructure side. So being able to run nodes, do the networking, the backups, everything that needs to happen to actually have a node operational on the network, but then also going into all the things on top of it. So the channels, liquidity management, the data, the analytics, the tax accounting, all the things that go into actually incorporating Lightning into your business, we can help offload a lot of that. We basically, as we talk with our customers, we basically become their outsourced Lightning team. Not only the infrastructure, but also helping them in a lot of different ways. We have some new products that we're working on as well that should be out, fairly soon, that also, kind of further abstract this and help businesses integrate, more and more. But ultimately, we're really focused on integrating more with crypto exchanges, payment processors, neobanks, folks like that, that, we're seeing a lot today where we're working more and more and see a lot of demand in basically people that are already moving Bitcoin today, but they're moving it on chain. And we, Lightning's the very valuable value prop of being able to actually move that kind of volume from Bitcoin on chain into the Lightning network, because businesses can save large amounts of money from just not paying the on chain fees that are associated with these movements that they were already going to do. And then you get the added benefits of the speed and all of those things. So we work a lot with, companies that are already moving Bitcoin today and may do it faster, cheaper, better. And then additionally, we're doing more and more work with traditional financial companies, people that, see our Fidelity report or something like that. And they're very interested in, the value is very obvious once you read it of wow, moving, money from here to France in half of a second with no fees. That sounds incredible. We want to capture that. And so we've been working more and more with getting that involved in with traditional financial companies and helping them navigate the space, and then also look at incorporating Lightning into their products and services.
So specifically, a bank could be a potential customer, an exchange, or an e-commerce company, or what might be some examples of I saw your news last week about the Ubank partnership, which is a little bit more digital asset focused, but they touch into CVS and Walgreens, and they have a lot of outlets that people are very familiar with, but just who might benefit from this, and does it feel complicated for them to put Bitcoin or Lightning into their payment suite that they're accepting?
Unbank is a good example that we just announced I think it was last week or the week before, people like them. We work with people like Yellow Card, the largest exchange in Africa. We work with people like Sonoda that does energy settlements using Bitcoin. And so the people that use us is pretty broad, because ultimately payments are very broad. A lot of people need payments, no matter what your business is. And so we're able to hook into a lot of different types of businesses. We're very focused on those kinds of, the people like Yellow Card or Unbank, people that are moving Bitcoin in an exchange context or kind of global payments, anything like that. The second part of really just trying to focus on being able to enable that for users and make it very easy. So if people are already moving Bitcoin or have Bitcoin incorporated into their tools and services, it's usually pretty easy for them to adopt Lightning. It's not the asset is the same, and that there's no new asset to Lightning. It's just Bitcoin. You're just kind of moving it in a little bit of a different way. So that's pretty easy. The traditional financial institutions are definitely the ones that take a little bit longer to really get them sold on it, get them to understand it, and all of those things. And with there is a recent announcement of SAB 121 getting repealed, which is going to be, I think, very helpful for getting more of these traditional financial institutions comfortable with it. And some of them, we've been working more and more on allowing them to get these benefits of Bitcoin, but being able to easily swap in and out of like dollars, for example, because, you know, they want these benefits, but they, for whatever reason, they can't hold Bitcoin directly, whether there's, you know, it's corporate governance or something like that. And so providing more solutions for the kind of the on off ramp, the exchange between Bitcoin and dollars is something we're working on too. So the complexity is just kind of dependent on the business, but we've been able to work really well, I think, in kind of all aspects and really solve problems for our customers.
I'm curious, are there any customer trends you can speak to, Graham, that, and maybe perhaps some that you, that have surprised you in a way since starting Voltage? Maybe a little more curious as well on these more traditional customers that perhaps it's their first time stepping into the Bitcoin payment space. Do they start small with you guys, test it out? And, you know, what's that kind of reaction of your customer's journey as they first try out this extremely efficient borderless payment system?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I mean, it depends on the business and kind of how they go about it. Like, again, if like it's a crypto exchange that already has Bitcoin movement and they're just wanting to add Lightning on top, it's usually pretty quick and easy. I mean, our APIs are pretty streamlined. The integration is simple. And so we're able to plug in and just really get going pretty fast. And we also help companies with like the UX considerations of when you're, you know, showing the customer, do they want to deposit with Bitcoin or Lightning? And like, what are all the things to think about there? And so we help really streamline the process for an integration, generally speaking. The traditional financial institutions are definitely the ones that are a little bit more unique. We've been doing, you know, a lot of those you have to start with like a POC and kind of like a research department inside of them. Prove like, hey, this can work. This is valuable. It's not, you know, that hard to integrate, all of those things. And then you can try and scale it up from there. And so they're definitely, those are slower movers, obviously. I mean, that's definitely kind of, they're known for being the slower movers. We're definitely seeing a lot more people starting to wake up and be interested in incorporating it into their products and services. And we usually start doing that with some POCs with companies and then, you know, trying to expand it from there.
Then Voltage as a company, Graham, you started, it was 2020, I believe, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
And so how big is the team? How has your company grown since 2020 just as an organization?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we've you know, kind of like ebbed and flowed over the years. Right now we're about 16 people. So we're still a pretty small, pretty lean team for what we're doing. But we're very intentional about that. We want to really maximize the amount of like value we can create for both our employees, our customers, all like everyone kind of involved in the process. And so we're very focused on providing the best value that we can for our company and for our users. And so we're definitely looking to, you know, we'll probably be expanding more and more throughout the year. But that's kind of where we've been at, you know, historically. And we're excited to do. We have a pretty good mix between like engineers and some of like people outside of engineering. So we've been, you know, growing our sales department, for example, as we've seen, you know, more and more demand starting to shape up through this year. So we've definitely been probably more engineering heavy in the past, where we're a little bit more diverse across roles today. And we'll probably continue to expand and be very nimble and very, you know, lean as far as what our company can do based on our team size. And then try and be very versatile in terms of like, you know, the makeup of the company.
Graham, you mentioned earlier that one of your clients is in Africa at Primary Exchange. So Voltage serves clients globally. Can you talk a little bit about how that process has been, and you being a U.S.-based company, how you look at expansion? I mean, either in terms of the products that you offer and the markets that you serve from a global perspective.
I mean, I think it's been really unique, and like we've kind of like when I launched Voltage, it was kind of just like put it out there and just see what happens. And a lot of like it's been very interesting to see the expansion happen just very organically, where we get people from Europe that sign up, Africa, you know, we're Asia, and it's just been very, very organic in that way. We've been definitely, you know, in the last like several months, been very more focused and kind of focusing in particular geographies and things like that. But ultimately, it's been very organic, which has been very interesting to see. And then we see a lot of value in places like Africa, for example, where people like really understand the value of Bitcoin and what it can do. Same thing with Central America, basically places that have, you know, historically very poor local, you know, banking systems and currencies and things like that understand the value of a well-functioning system. And, you know, if people in the U.S. like myself, we take a lot for granted in terms of like, you know, I can go, we have like 100 banks are around me, and it's very easy to go and get money when you need it and all those things, where there's other areas of the world that, that don't have that kind of access. And so we see Bitcoin really, really resonating with those types of groups because they don't have the same kind of structures that we do. So ultimately, you know, it's been very interesting to see the expansion happen just kind of on its own. But it also, I think, speaks to one of the great things about Bitcoin is it's just inherently global. And so it allows us to be very nimble as well, just because of the technology that we use is already in every corner of the world. It's just a matter of, like, you know, getting them on board and getting them, you know, hooked up. So given that it's one of the great things about building a Bitcoin company is that the network itself is already in every corner of the world. It depends on what products and services you are, for what geographies you can serve, but ultimately the network's already there. It's just a matter of what do you do on top and what, you know, what countries do you serve based on that?
Yeah, what you're saying is really logical. I'm based in Mexico City, and just having spent a number of years here, I think that was part of my early Bitcoin journey, was just after having experienced incredibly high fees for sending money, challenges in the banking system and payment system. It's like when I first saw it as a technology that could really improve financial experiences, and continue to see that. But, you know, and it does feel as if the U.S. market are more store of value users of Bitcoin, and payments would tend to be in geographies like Africa, like Latin America, Central America, so areas like that. So, yeah, do you track the growth by region, and is that what you've experienced? I mean, U.S. use of your services versus global.
Yeah, I mean, I think I agree with the kind of sentiment that historically, I mean, the U.S. has been very kind of store value focused, where some of these other ones are, you know, very much on the payment side of things. And so I think it just depends on, you know, what opportunities there are in the location. Obviously, in the U.S., you know, the big thing right now is like the Bitcoin Strategic Reserve and what is happening with that and what is possible. And that's obviously a very store value thing to be focused on. It's not really a payments tech at all in that regard. So it's, I think that it's very, we're seeing that reflected in terms of like the sentiment across geographies. But additionally, we do have like a large and growing amount of like US-based businesses that are using it for payments, or like exchanges that enable it for, you know, on-off ramps and things like that. So we still see that definitely growing as far as like the US goes. And so I think that, you know, generally it'll be something that'll be obviously very evolving over time as well, where we see a lot of just as things come and go, or as more and more like people like global remittances add in more capabilities, leveraging Bitcoin and Lightning. You know, there's a lot of the U.S. has a huge amount of remittance volume into other countries. And so being able to further bring that on. And so maybe it's maybe from the government's perspective, it's still very store of value. But the, you know, the boots on the ground is still very much using it for payments and is very interested in that. So we think that that will continue to evolve and continue to grow, especially as we just get Lightning more in the mainstream and just more in the know of what it can do. I think that one of the things is, one of the challenges we come up against is Bitcoin in a lot of people's minds is only store of value. It is the slow, expensive thing. And the only thing that you can do with it is buy it and put it in a vault and just hope that it appreciates. We're like, that's actually not the case. Like, that's not actually the reality that we see today, but there's a lot of people that are still stuck in that mindset. And so as we continue to open up people's minds into what's possible, I think that that will really expand the adoption of Bitcoin for payments.
Yeah, and you know, it's so much of what we are actually, Lynn and I are also doing through this podcast is, you know, precisely to your point, a lot of people's initial impression on Bitcoin is the asset, right? And of course, it's an extremely important aspect of this innovation. But then you have the entire monetary protocol aspect of it, which, I mean, we're just scratching the surface of the implications of what this is going to, you know, mean for businesses and just society in general going forward. So, you know, right there with you, Graham. You know, one other question I want to get your thoughts on is, are you seeing because you mentioned the dollar on and off ramps that you're starting to evolve as well within the platform. Do you see some businesses starting to look at this as just, you know, maybe from an aspect of handling liquidity between different countries internally within their own, like, let's say multinational, you know, who has maybe a treasury in various jurisdictions, and at whatever frequency that they need, whether it's, you know, weekly or what monthly, whatever it may be, right? But speaking to these kind of high value payments, are you seeing some interest in this, you know, this use case of Lightning as just an efficient way to cross border settle within my company, let's say? Are we there?
Yeah, I mean, I think that people are definitely starting to explore that from like kind of I think about that from like replacing things like SWIFT or some of like the really like big ingrained like payment protocols that are like interbank, like, you know, moving money from like your US bank to your European bank or something like that. I think that we're definitely like kind of early in that, but we definitely are seeing people explore that and look at that as an opportunity. And I think it makes a ton of sense of being able to move money again, like, you know, cheaper and faster than anything else. So there's a huge amount of opportunity there that we are definitely seeing people take on. And then I think additionally, like we saw at the Plan B conference that Tether announced like stablecoins coming to Lightning, which but we're very bullish on stablecoins on Lightning for the reason of one of the biggest crypto use cases that exists today is stablecoins. They're all on Tron, Ethereum, whatever it is. And I think that, you know, they're very obviously used for a lot of reasons, especially in like places like Central America or Africa or where, you know, you name it, because of Bitcoin's too volatile or there's, you know, some kind of reason why or whatever. They want their like local currency or a dollar based currency, which is historically very hard to get in some of these places. And so the use case is very obvious for things like stablecoins. And then if you can couple that with the cheapest, fastest way of moving the value, I think it's a no-brainer, and it's going to unlock a huge amount of value for a lot of people, because the way that stablecoins operate today is on these, I would say, inferior protocols and, you know, less secure ways of moving money. And if we can do that same, solve that same use case, which is a very valid and very important use case, if we can do that on top of Bitcoin and get do it much more efficiently than anything else, that's a huge opportunity. So we're seeing that as like, that's probably going to be like the first kind of mover, is like this stablecoin on Lightning use case. And then I think as we continue to evolve that, we'll do more and more inside of like this kind of interbank settlement type stuff.
Graham, just talking about Voltage and the journey of growing the company and funding, according to what I've been able to determine, you've raised $6 million in seed funding pretty early on, which is a really healthy amount of funding for the Bitcoin ecosystem in a quick amount of time. Can you talk a little bit about your fundraising journey? Your cap table has some incredible names on it, including Bitcoin Focus VCs, along with Google Ventures, GV, and Craft Ventures, which is led by David Sachs, now the U.S. Crypto czar. So you really made inroads into some significant players. Can you talk a little bit about your fundraising journey and how challenging that was, or was it easy for you? Would love to hear your thoughts, because I think that's one of the first questions entrepreneurs think about is how can I fund my growth?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, fundraising is a very wild ride. Like I have never, this is my first startup. I've never raised funds before I started Voltage. So definitely learned a lot just kind of on the job as you're trying to like raise money from people and whatnot. And we've been very blessed with the amount and like our investors and things like that. And it's also been incredibly challenging through the years as well. And so I think that, you know, ultimately the way that really, I think that the origin of getting such a strong group of investors is connections of other people that I had like in the Bitcoin ecosystem. So it is kind of the more introductions you can get from other people, and the further you can network just in the Bitcoin ecosystem, and then just even more broadly than that, is just, it's so important, because it's a big testament to our cap table, is just being able to our friends, people that we met, people that were customers, they were able to like introduce us to like some really strong investors and be able to grow that way. So that's been a huge blessing, is just the network effects of knowing people that can get you kind of inroads into certain folks. And like we have, I think that we're very unique in that we have a pretty diverse group of investors. We have some Bitcoin only investors like Trammell Venture Partners and Stillmark, or at least very Bitcoin focused. And then we have some just more broad VCs, like you mentioned, of like Craft and Google Ventures, that invest in, you know, a lot of different things. And I think that's something I would always recommend people to strive for, is have that diversity, because you know, Bitcoin VCs are fantastic. They get it and they will be kind of rooting for you even when it's like, it's a bear market and like, you know, things aren't going quite well and like they just understand how Bitcoin goes. And then on the flip side, the more traditional VCs, they have a ton of knowledge in just growing and scaling companies and what do you need to actually operate a business and do it very, very well, and then also expand and get connections into, you know, whatever kind of partnerships or anything that you need down the road. So I always tell people to strive to kind of have a mix of both. It's sometimes easier said than done. And, you know, ultimately you want to start your business and get off the ground. And sometimes if that's only Bitcoin focused VCs, that's okay. You know, just start there and be able to grow, show some metrics, and then, you know, be able to go from there. So it's definitely a very unique niche. Running a Bitcoin company, startups are hard in general. Running a startup on a very new technology, which is Bitcoin, I still call Bitcoin new. It's, you know, many years old, but I still call it new. And being able to build a company around that is even like, you know, it, you know, 10 times the amount of hard. But it pays off dividends, and it's obviously a very worthwhile cause at the same time.
And Israel and I also have conversations with the primary VC, Bitcoin VCs in the space too. And what we've discovered, and coming from the VC background that I have, and Israel did too, it's a different mentality. And so, do you ever find conflicts among your, you know, among your investors between maybe more traditional VCs have a different approach to scaling or growth or tokenization and how you fund yourself versus Bitcoin VCs that might, you know, have that more longer term, low time preference way of viewing growing your business?
Yeah, like yes and no. I mean, I think that there's definitely, we've never been like, you know, pushed to like, oh, create a token or add Ethereum support or something like that from like even our traditional investors. So there aren't really, I think that people generally, even like traditional VCs, understand kind of your play, why you started the business, what you're trying to do. And I think that they don't try and, you know, generally speaking, they don't try and like kick you off of that or put you in a different direction or something like that. There's a reason why they invested in you in the first place, and that's because of the business and the mission and all of those things. But then there definitely is like there's definitely a lot of, you know, I think it's maybe even not the difference between Bitcoin and traditional VCs. I think that it's just generally some VCs have different approaches to certain things. They want to see certain things happen that maybe others disagree with and things like that. I think ultimately from the founder perspective, it's just always important to like to focus on like kind of the end goal of what are you trying to achieve, and then have a very pragmatic. I think it's always good to hear everyone's kind of side, everyone's points, get all the information that you can, and then make a decision and then communicate that decision. So like, we're doing, you know, X, Y, and Z because of these reasons. And it kind of helps, even if some people, even if investors like maybe disagree with it or something, you at least can explain your case and like, this is why we're doing it, which helps everyone get on board. And generally speaking, again, VCs are very good at like understanding, like disagreeing, but like being okay with it. I like the decision at the end of the day, because, you know, maybe they don't disagree with it, but as long as we have like kind of a strategy and a way of thinking about why we chose what we did, that's better than just be like, well, you know, I don't want to do that because I don't like it, or I don't know, or something like that. And so as long as you have kind of a reason behind it, that really helps in any kind of those like conflicts or just people having different opinions on what a solution to a problem is.
Another important point I'd like to get your take on, Graham, from a founder's perspective, you know, building a company. Well, in your case, you're focused on the monetary protocol, but you understand the Bitcoin, the asset component as well, right? And we've seen many startups from, you know, from Lynn and I's experience, and it can depend a lot on the stage of the company, the business model, but integrating in some form of it or another a Bitcoin treasury, is that something you give thought to? And maybe, I guess, just generally, what would be some advice for other entrepreneurs in this early stage journey as far as, do you keep a portion of your company assets in Bitcoin? And, you know, perhaps that's a treasure chest that protects you from further dilution down the road, or how do you think about resources?
Yeah, yes. So we definitely have a Bitcoin treasury at Voltage, and we've been doing that, I think, basically since I started the company. So we've been definitely doing that, you know, for a long time. We also accept payments for our services in Bitcoin, and whenever someone pays with Bitcoin, we don't like instantly convert that. We keep it in Bitcoin. So we kind of have both our treasury as well as any Bitcoin payments we receive for our services, we keep in Bitcoin. And I generally, generally recommend anyone to do that inside of the Bitcoin space. I would say just maybe a recommendation just to be very pragmatic about it. You don't want to go so far that you're like, you know, struggling to pay your bills that are like all in fiat or something like that. You know, having a kind of pragmatic view on it, especially that's a great thing to discuss with investors and get kind of buy-in on of like, hey, what is your, even that's even something before you get to like actual funding, when you're just kind of talking to investors, like gauging like, hey, what do you generally recommend to your companies around like Bitcoin treasuries and things like that? And then again, if you're like, you know, Bitcoin VCs are probably all of them recommend some kind of Bitcoin treasury. And then traditional VCs, I think that they generally at least understand it at a minimum. So I think that it's definitely recommended from my standpoint. And we've been able to, it's definitely paid dividends in terms of like the price appreciation of Bitcoin and being able to, you know, it can buy you a few months extra runway, whatever it is. It can actually, you know, definitely help the business in general. So I do recommend companies starting a Bitcoin treasury, and then just being kind of looking at, being pragmatic about it, looking at what makes sense for your business. And then also, I think it's definitely a worthwhile conversation to discuss with your board or your investors or whoever to make sure that you're all kind of on the same page. And I think that removes a lot of from the founder's shoulders as well. If you can kind of make it in a group decision, it's helpful, and it's not such a me decision or like just the founder group.
A decentralized decision.
Yeah.
Well, Graham, as we get ready to kind of wind up the episode, any other advice you have for an entrepreneur or just an individual looking to be a part of the Bitcoin space or start a company? How would you recommend your path of getting into it? You were very early, but given where we are today, what would you recommend or advice
offer? I usually just recommend just to people to get involved, get your hands dirty one way or the other. You know, I didn't start Voltage by like first having the idea and then go pitching investors and then raising money and then going and building it. I built it first, and that pays dividends for actually going and having conversations with investors, because the more that you can show, the more metrics, the more product, whatever it is that you could actually show people, the far easier it is to raise money. But then also you could just have more better fruitful conversations. So I always recommend people just to get their hands dirty. And even if that's not you're trying to start a company, if that's like, hey, I want to get a job in Bitcoin at a startup or something like that, the best thing that you can do is just kind of start to get your hands dirty in Bitcoin, whether that's contributing to open source software or just being a part of like kind of maybe doing some freelance contract marketing or something like that. Like whatever it is that you're good at, just trying to do that in your free time, maybe for free for a little bit, just to get the experience and build sort of like a rapport with the ecosystem. That's the greatest place to start. And then being able to, again, if you're trying to start a company, start to build out the earliest, smallest version of MVP to just kind of show that it can work and you can get some amount of traction and things like that. Those always help, you know, as when you actually go and try and raise money and stuff like that. So being able to actually start, I guess maybe to put that into a sentence, just start doing something. You know, the more that you try and wait of like timing it perfectly or getting someone on board before you have anything is like, that's always going to be a very hard thing. If you can just start moving something in some direction, that's going to pay dividends as you start to actually, when you want to take it to the next level.
Really appreciate the time to give us a rundown on everything you guys are working on at Voltage, Graham. I mean, you're definitely leaders in the space. Lightning Network, since I first heard about it, has only continued to grow. And now it just feels like we are kind of reaching that point in the curve where it's going to just exponentially grow. It seems like all the metrics from an efficiency and cost perspective are improving at a fast pace. So, you know, excited to hear more about what you guys are working on. And I guess, you know, maybe on a final note, as far as, you know, the roadmap of the next 12 months, anything you want people to be aware of or any, you know, new releases coming up, or what are you guys, you know, looking forward to in 2025?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we're doing a lot and onboarding a lot of new customers this year, both, you know, traditional as well as, you know, crypto companies. And so there's a lot that we're going to be putting out this year as far as, you know, kind of new companies adopting and integrating Lightning. Then we're also have quite a bit of we have a pretty full roadmap from the product side for this year. We'll have a new product release in the next month to 2 months that I think will be, we're very excited about it. We think will be really substantial. It'll be something pretty different than what's out there in the market today. That's probably all I can share about it for right now. So I guess like just kind of teasing it and telling people to look out for it when that comes in the next several months. But We'll be definitely adding in a lot of new customers as well as new product this year that we're really excited about.
And we'll link to the Fidelity Voltage report that you that you referenced and we talked about a little bit today. And you and I met at the Plan B El Salvador conference. But are you speaking at any upcoming events or any place somebody could actually, you know, connect, listen to you speak and connect with you in person?
Yeah, I mean, I'll be speaking at the Bitcoin 2025 conference in Vegas in May this year. So I'll definitely be there. And then our team is scattered around a lot of the other events. So things like Money 2020 or Consensus in Toronto, or there's a huge amount of conferences that we're probably attending. I know that from a speaker standpoint, I will be there at the Bitcoin 2025 conference.
We'll look forward to that. Again, thank you so much for your time and for sharing the Voltage journey with us. And we look forward to continuing to follow your work and the work of Voltage.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you very much. Great to be on.
Thanks for listening to the Build with Bitcoin podcast. If you found benefit in what you heard in this episode, we'd truly appreciate it if you would like, share, or leave a comment on whichever platform you're listening, as this helps others find us, which is especially important for a new podcast. And as a reminder, our content is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only and is not to be considered investment advice or a recommendation to invest in any company or asset mentioned in the podcast. Build with Bitcoin is a proud affiliate partner of River, a full-service, 100% reserve custody, Bitcoin-only financial services company. For your next Bitcoin purchase, use our exclusive link, partner.river.com/buildwithbitcoin. Thank you sincerely for being a part of the Build with Bitcoin community.